Case of the Frozen Pussy, Slip or Trip, The Million Dollar Fee. These are just a few of the strange cases and wild tales you will find on the Miami Memoirs podcast. Strange Cases and Wild Tales presents real case histories and true stories related to the law practice and experiences of a creative Florida attorney reaching out over 60 years. There's more than meets the eye. In these sparkling memoirs, Florida attorney Louis Ress uncorks a caseload of true, weird, wonderful and wild stories from an always eventful 6 decades of life in the law. Before we begin, I would like to tell you about a new book from Louis. Miami Memoirs, including The Maharani's Ring. Round 2 from the amazing life and times of legendary South Florida attorney Louis Ress takes readers from Brooklyn in the 1940s, via a spell in a top-secret army department, and a transatlantic solo flight in a replica Spirit of St. Louis, to adventures in and out of the courtroom in a sometimes rougher-than-ready 50s and 60s Miami. The book is available on Amazon, just search Louis Ress. And now let's begin.
Hi everyone, welcome to Miami Memoirs, Strange Cases and Wild Tales with Louis Ress. I'm Jeanette Garcia, your host, and today we're on episode 34, Kentucky Fried Chicken. Louis, the next episode is entitled pretty much KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken. Did you actually meet Colonel Sanders?
Oh yes, I met Colonel Sanders a number of times, and of course I had dealings with many of the people in his family. I can tell you about it.
Yeah.
Harlan Sanders was his name, the colonel, and he was the creator of Kentucky Fried Chicken. And he really did wear those white suits that you see him in with the black string tie.
Nice.
He also wore black laced high top shoes that no one knows about or noticed. And he wore long white socks. And in the wintertime, he wore long johns, long underwear. And he wore it all the time. And he prayed on his knees at least twice a day. Also, he had large, thick, dark-rimmed eyeglasses, black ones, and a big mane of white hair. You could not miss the man. When he entered the room, all eyes were on him. I saw him sit down at a table in the New England Oyster House, which is long gone, another company that went under. Mm-hmm. It was located on Biscayne Boulevard. It was a great seafood place. And when he walked in, it was an occasion. Everyone stared, and the whispering started. The TV commercials barely do him justice, and the lookalike who portrays the colonel doesn't quite make the grade. In fact, I think they did away with him, and they now just use a sketch from his photographs.
Yeah, and was he really a colonel?
No. The colonel was a colonel in name only. He was an honorary Kentucky colonel, and that was given as recognition for him being a goodwill ambassador for Kentucky. Mm. The governor in Kentucky makes a lot of people colonels, and in the South, that's a very big thing to have a title like a colonel or general. It's important.
It's esteemed, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the recognition came from the governor of Kentucky. And of course, Harlan Sanders, or known as Colonel Sanders, bore the title proudly. He actually started to think that he was a colonel, but he really served in the United States Army as a private for about 3 months in Cuba.
Oh, wow, Cuba, nice.
And during the Spanish-American War when he was young. And he was a very nice man when I knew him, and he was always smiling. And when he sold out to Hublin for $2 million, he stayed on as a goodwill ambassador for a relatively small compensation. What most folks don't know is that he kept the chicken franchises in the state of Florida, except for the Panhandle, the whole East Coast, all of Florida. Mm. He gave them to his daughter. He also kept them in South Georgia. And the colonel's daughter's name was Margaret. And she was his heir, and she became the owner of these franchises. And as I recall, it was over 200 KFCs that she had the franchise.
And what was Margaret like? Was she spoiled as a child?
Margaret? No. She was very cool. She was nice and sweet and refined and quiet. She really nice. She enjoyed art and music and artists and musicians and younger men.
Oh, okay.
She was a character. And her son, Harlan Adams, had been a factory worker, and he became her manager. And she was represented by an attorney. His real name isn't Gene Underberg, but I'm using that name, whose law office was in Bay Harbor Islands here in Miami Beach. and Gene invited me to lunch. And at lunch, he said, Lewis, I'm resigning from my practice and I'm redesigning it, and I expect to specialize in probate and wills and trusts and estates. I want you and your firm to take over the Kentucky Fried Chicken of Florida account. I've done a lot of research, and I know just who you are, and I've checked every member of your firm, and you are the right people to handle this client, and I'm putting Kentucky Fried Chicken in your hands. So that's what he said.
Wow. And what did you say back in response?
I said, Gene, you know, I don't know how to say thank you. Would you allow me to share some fees with you, which was not uncommon, you know, referral fees, participation fees. I suggested 25% of any fees that we earned from Kentucky Fried Chicken during the first 2 years. And Gene said, Lewis, I wouldn't consider that for a minute. I don't want any fees. Just look after my clients, and I am certain that you will.
So what was the first thing you did?
Well, after meeting the Kentucky Fried Chicken family, you know, Margaret and Harlan and the Colonel, one of the first things I did was to make a pilgrimage to Corbin, Kentucky, and have my picture taken next to the large bronze State Road Department plaque honoring the founding of KFC and the Colonel.
Oh, wow.
The old screened-in restaurant is still preserved. That's where they have the plaque. And I knew that the secret recipe of the blend of herbs and spices was hidden in that building. Oh. And I knew where it was hidden, but discretion kept me from searching it out.
Are you kidding? It was really in there?
Yep, it was. I don't want to say too much, but it's a big secret. But I knew where it was kept, and I could have had access to it.
Oh, you could have snuck in there and taken some notes, huh?
I didn't want to do anything like that. In fact, the Colonel had, this was the first restaurant that the Colonel had opened, and it was there in Corbin. But I think the traffic pattern in front of the restaurant changed, and it started to go down, so he sold it, and he made very little on the sale. Then he went on the road, cooking his secret formula recipe of chicken from the trunk of his car in a newfangled pressure cooker.
Hmm.
Do you know what a pressure cooker is?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a big pot, you know, with steams, and there was a little gadget, a weight that was on top, and the steam came up, and the weight would jiggle.
Wow. Yeah, he's lugging this around.
Right. That's when he came up with the idea of a chain of restaurants selling his specially prepared herb and spices chicken with a royalty of, I believe, 5 cents per piece of chicken. And he probably was 62 years of age at that time. So that's a real American success story.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And his daughter got the 200 stores?
Yes, she did. But she was very arty. So Margaret decided to sell the Kentucky Fried Chicken of Florida to her son, Harland. And our law firm went along with the business. So my law partner, Shelley Rosenberg, was going to represent Harland, the son, in the negotiations with his mother. And we brought in another attorney, Barry Sales. I changed his name too, but he was a local Miami Shores attorney, and I think he's passed on, to represent Margaret as the seller. So the buy-sell negotiation was going on in our library between the mother and the son. And when I arrived after lunch, Harland comes up to me and he says, I said to him, Harlan, how's it going? He said, terrible. That damned attorney, Barry Sales, that you got to represent my mother, he's terrible. He's arguing about everything. He's making speeches. He's killing the deal. Turning my own mother against me.
Oh, it's terrible.
Right. And my partner, Shelley, was perspiring. He was fit to be tied. He said, Lewis, it's true. Barry is killing this deal. I could use a little help.
Lewis, what did you do?
Well, I had a friend and a client by the name of Mark Serlin. He was a dermatologist, and he gave me an elaborate machete. It came in a hand-tooled leather case with a leather fringe all around it, and the blade was shiny stainless steel about 2 feet long. It was resting on a shelf in the library. So I walked into the library, and Barry Sales, who was representing the mother, Margaret, was sitting there, and I unsheathed the machete, and I took out the machete from the scabbard, and I pulled put the blade to Barry's neck, right under his chin.
What?
And I looked him in the eye and I said, "Barry, if you turn this mother against her son, I will slit your throat from ear to ear."
Oh, did you really say that? You did that?
Yep,
that's,
I did. That was that was one of the most effective legal arguments I ever made. Well, Barry's eyes were popping out of his head. I mean, this is totally true. And he stammered and he stuttered and he stopped obstructing the deal. And by 4 in the afternoon, Harlan Adams was hugging me. His mother was very pleased and she gave me a big kiss on the cheek. And we were friends from that date to the date they each died. And my partner, Shelley Rosenberg, was smiling. And Barry, the attorney who was obstructing the deal, said that the negotiations went smoothly once I left the room. They went smoothly. I had the blade of the knife to his throat.
Yeah, there's no other way that could go. And what was Harlan Adams like?
Well, for a high school educated country boy and an ex-factory worker, Harlan would have given the late colonel every reason to be proud of his grandson and namesake. The young man was making a great deal of money. He was expanding all over Florida and looking at every detail of the business. He bought a two-story Southern-style mansion on the south end of Belmead Island right here in the bay in Miami, with tall white columns in front. And he invited his friends and followers to come in and visit and test the various new recipes, including barbecue sauces. And he entertained graciously. He also looked just like Robert Redford, a very handsome fellow.
And what was his life like?
Harlan? Well, Harlan worked long hours, and he played hard, too. He had two Corvettes. He had a duplex apartment on the slopes in Snowmass in Colorado, and a beautiful home in Snowmass. He also bought the back half of the mountain and built a large cabin there, even though he couldn't get electricity. And he skied with celebrities like Lucille Ball and Buddy Hackett, who had apartments in the same apartment building.
Oh, wow. And what about his personal life?
And by the way, that apartment building was right on the slopes. It had a beautiful bearskin rug. He had killed a bear. He shot the bear and he had the skin and made a rug in front of the fireplace.
Oh, wow.
His personal life wasn't always smooth, though. He had romantic problems. His wife, who was his second wife, took the kids and left with one of his good acquaintances.
Oh.
And she and her new husband built a big house in the Snowmass area. And the new road in which they lived was being named at an auction in Snowmass. And Harlan attended, and he bid. And he won the bid with $40,000. And he had the right to name the road, which is still there, and it's known as Adams Way. He thought that it was a great idea that his ex-wife and her new husband had to put down on their return address Adams Way.
Oh, clever guy.
Yeah, he was having a hell of a time, an uninhibited time. He drank too much. He skied a lot. He rolled down the snow-covered hill with me one night. We had a few drinks and we were having some laughs. And he took on number three, wife number three, in a week-long party and ceremony in Beverly Hills. My partner, Shelley Rosenberg, and I were ushers at the wedding, along with a chubby guy who, at the church rehearsal, kept saying, "This Jew boy ain't going to swallow any of them religious crackers." Shelley and I, my partner and I, reassured Buddy Hackett that he didn't have to take communion or swallow crackers or even kneel, just to stand there and smile. And the wedding was in the famous church from the movie 10. I don't know if you ever remember that. It's a gorgeous church. And then Harlan had a whole bunch of activities for his wedding party. They had daily trips to various museums and historical sites. One evening, Harlan entertained us at a Moroccan restaurant with open-air ceilings. It was gorgeous.
Wow,
and the wedding
beautiful.
Dinner was at the Wilshire Beverly Wilshire Hotel. We relived the Great Gatsby.
Huh?
And was partying for a week while partying with champagne and elaborate gifts and bands playing dance music into the night. And the champagne really flowed.
Wow, sounds like a great party. You had a good time?
It was wild. And finally, we were sitting at a formal dinner after the wedding. And after a few drinks too many, Buddy Hackett was saying something, you know, the famous comedian. He was saying something to a few of us. And the young lady started to laugh. And Buddy Hackett turned on her and said, "What are you laughing at? I didn't say anything funny. What are you laughing at? Are you ridiculing me?" And his voice was getting louder and louder and louder.
Oh, boy.
And the young lady was dumbstruck. She mumbled, I didn't mean to offend you. I thought it was funny, the way you speak. I mean, it's just funny. Buddy Hackett was all over her. Now he was yelling, what do you mean? How dare you laugh at me? How dare you? He was getting quite unpleasant. And I put my hand on Buddy Hackett's arm and I said, Buddy, you should get down on your knees and thank God and thank this lady that she laughed when you spoke because you have a very different voice than most people and it tends to sound funny and that's the way you make your living. People laugh when you speak. Be thankful, be grateful, and tell this lady you are sorry. Man, was she glad to get away from him.
And what happened next? Did he say something or did Harlan step in?
Well, he wound up, he's deceased, he wound up, his wife divorced him.
Oh.
And he was having some problems, I think, emotionally. He was unstable.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So then, of course, there were another time when we were back home and Harlan Adams came in to see me in the office. And I looked at him. He dropped in to say hello. And I said, Harlan, are you okay? You look like you lost your best friend. He said, Lewis, I'm really pressed for funds. In fact, I'm stressed out. I said, what do you need? How much do you need? He said, right now, about $85,000.
Oh.
So I called in the bookkeeper. Nina Perina was her name. I said, Nina, please write Mr. Adams a check for $85,000 from the office account. He said, Lewis, I'll sign a note and I'll gladly pay whatever interest you think is fair. I said, Harlan, you'll do no such thing. Just pay it back if and when you can. I wouldn't dream of charging you interest and just don't give it a second thought. When you get a chance, pay me back.
And what did you do next?
Well, I immediately personally reimbursed the firm from my own account. And then Harlan paid back within 6 months.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that was good.
Then he came to visit me again. And he said, Lewis, there's an opportunity to invest in a Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurant in Jacksonville. It's a triple net lease.
What is a triple net lease? I've never heard of that.
Well, it's where the tenant pays everything. He pays your mortgage, he pays the taxes, he pays the insurance, he pays real estate taxes. So you don't have to pay anything.
Mm-hmm.
You get a check for a net amount, and the tenant pays everything.
Oh, okay.
Oh, he said, this restaurant is our best producer. Just put up $150,000 and it's yours. The lease pays everything. And additionally, it yields enough to repay you within 2 years, and it pays off a $200,000 mortgage. Wow. I offered it to my partners. They weren't interested. So I bought it for my wife, and she had an income, plus she got her money back, plus she paid off the underlying mortgage.
Great.
And Harlan wanted an option to buy the property back after a certain number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked that it be made both ways. If Kentucky Fried Chicken didn't buy it back when it was due, then I would have the right to compel them to buy it back. Neither he nor I had ever heard of anything like that, but he agreed to it. By the time I exercised the option and compelled them to buy it back, the mortgage had been paid off, my wife had gotten all of her investment back, plus she had an annual income, and the sales price that she got more than tripled her investment.
Oh, that's great. So great news.
That's when you treat people nicely, they respond, you know, and that's what he did.
Yeah. So what ended up happening with him? He got married again a third time. How did that go?
Well, the third marriage crashed. Harlan found this buxom wife in bed with another man.
Oh, no.
And I had never liked her in the first place because I saw her pull the ear of a kid. She pulled him by the ear.
Oh.
She was a meanie. And that marriage wound up in a terrible divorce.
I guess third time isn't a charm, huh?
No. And then Harlan sold Kentucky Fried Chicken of Florida for $10 million. And he had a restrictive non-compete clause. So he couldn't go back into the restaurant, franchise business.
Oh, no.
So he bought a restaurant for himself. And it was a very, it was called Adam's Apple, as a matter of fact. It was up in Orlando.
Hmm.
And he had a dishonest partner. and he lost a bundle. The restaurant went under.
Oh, no.
Then he went into business importing spices and working out of his garage because he knew the spice business. Mm-hmm. And he married for the fourth time.
Oh, no.
This time, Harland. A dental assistant.
Oh, gosh, Harland.
I was
Harland.
Not invited to his wedding. He and I got out of sync. I had never even met his latest wife. He was angry that I had criticized my partner, Shelley Rosenberg, for Shelley leaving his wife and four kids and not properly providing for them. And Harland, having experienced these divorces, mm-hmm. Was pro-husband and didn't look at things equally.
Right.
And he was angry with me that I could criticize my partner for walking out on his wife and not looking after her properly.
Oh.
So Shelley passed away, and I sat with Harland at Shelley's funeral. And Harland looked at me and he said, "Lewis, I changed my life. No more drinking. I found Jesus."
Did he really change his lifestyle?
Well, he said he found Jesus. And I can tell you what happened. He died shortly thereafter.
Oh, he really did find him.
No, maybe he met Jesus, but yeah. It was a terrible thing.
Yeah.
And
that's a shame.
I wasn't even advised of his death or given the opportunity to attend his funeral. Oh. So it was. But I had some unfinished business after Harland died. And we no longer were representing Kentucky Fried Chicken because they had been absorbed by a huge corporation. Hmm. So I called up Gene Underberg, the attorney who originally brought us the Kentucky Fried Chicken account. And I met with Gene at lunch in a fancy restaurant in Bal Harbor in Miami Beach. And I said, "Gene, I never really had the chance to adequately thank you for referring Kentucky Fried Chicken to me. You really impressed me. It was so gracious of you, and it makes me so very proud that a fellow Jew would be more concerned for the client and would refuse to accept a referral fee." He said, "Lewis, I was pleased to do it, but you know, I'm not Jewish."
Oh, it's good that you guys could laugh at yourself. So a lot happened in this story, Lewis. There's a lot going on here. What do you think is a key message here?
Well, there's always some messages in my story for some reason.
Always, yes.
And they're all true. Everything in this story is true. What it tells you is life is not a straight line affair. And if you look at the lives in this family, the three lives, the Colonel, mm-hmm. Margaret, his daughter, and Harland, the grandson, you could draw a curve. Harland had a roller coaster of a life. It was up
he
and
sure
down.
Did.
He
yeah.
started at the bottom, then he went up and he owned Kentucky Fried Chicken, and then he got divorced, and then he
lost
money in business, and then yeah. he died. So it went up and then down like a big roller coaster. Margaret had the smoothest life of all. She liked men and she liked art and she liked music, and her life was terrific up high and mm-hmm. stable, straight right across. The Colonel had a different life. He had a life like a rocket ship. He was down and struggling. He was having a tough time in the restaurant business. He was going bankrupt. He developed a chicken, and suddenly he started going up like a rocket.
Yeah.
And he died at the top of his career when he was world famous. So there are three graphs, and it's just like doing the stock market or something. You could graph out their lives. The point, I guess, is that Colonel Sanders was a terrific guy, and he went on to be successful from having failure. So who else? I started to think of who else has done that. Well, Walt mm-hmm. Disney was fired from the Kansas City Star because they said he lacked imagination and he had no good ideas.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, he showed them.
Did you know that?
He showed them for sure.
Oprah Winfrey was fired as a TV anchor. Did you know that?
No.
In Baltimore, Maryland, she was fired for getting too emotionally invested in her stories. Oh.
Well, that served her later. So,
Steve Spielberg. The great
this one
director.
I know. Yeah, this one I
he
know.
He was rejected by the California School of Cinematic Arts multiple times
Yeah, and
for
he went
being sufficiently creative. And he, of course, he did Jaws as a starter.
Yeah. Well, he did an earlier film that he just went out and filmed himself. He's like, okay, no one's going to believe in me. I'm going to go film something.
Right.
And then people saw that first film, and he eventually got Jaws. So
right. You know, Macy's. Well, Mr. Macy, R.H. Macy, he had a bunch of failed retail ventures before he got into Macy's. Mr. Honda, Suito Honda, he was ostracized by Japanese business because he was too aggressively individualistic.
Oh.
They were all, you know, very
group-oriented. And,
Sir Isaac Newton. You know, the great physics and math genius.
Yeah.
I think he created a calculus, and he was the one that studied gravity. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they said he couldn't run the family farm. He couldn't be a farmer. He was unsuccessful. And Thomas Edison, the teachers told him that he was too stupid to learn anything.
Oh.
So there's just a few of the people I just picked out for you to tell you about failure, and then they go on to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
Then a lot of famous people die broke.
Oh, that's a shame, yeah.
And I can tell you about that. Who died broke? Well, first of all, you have a whole bunch of movie celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
So you have Joe Louis, Sammy Davis Jr. died broke.
Oh.
Whitney Houston, they didn't find anything. Michael Jackson, they had a lot of problems with his money. They finally are getting some monies from reselling his name and his records and his. But a lot of them, you know, Billie Holiday.
Yeah,
she died broke.
Oh.
Mickey Rooney.
Mm-hmm.
You know him?
Yeah.
Judy Garland?
Mm-hmm.
Judy Garland died broke. Mickey Rooney died broke. You remember Gary Coleman? He's an actor.
Yeah.
He died broke. You know who Bela Lugosi was? He was Dracula.
Uh-huh.
He died broke.
Wow.
You remember Anita Ekberg from La Dolce Vita?
Yes.
She died broke.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah, a lot of people. Then you had people like in the chicken business who went under. Chicken business is terribly competitive. So who went under? Well, you had, remember Minnie Pearl?
No.
Minnie Pearl was with a hat with a little tag on it from the Grand Ole Opry. And she went under. She had Minnie Pearl chicken. Kenny Rogers.
Kenny Rogers,
Kenny
yeah.
Kenny Rogers chicken was great.
That I do remember,
yeah. Chicken Unlimited went under.
Haven't heard that one.
Church's chicken went under.
That's true, yeah.
Sister's chicken went under. So it's a very, very tough business. It's a tough, tough business. Some of the businesses, I'll give you an idea, that went under. You'll probably remember them. Department stores, Sears.
Oh, Sears is gone, yeah.
Neiman Marcus. Radio Shack.
Yeah.
B. Altman's.
Circuit City, too. It's another one.
Lord & Taylor. Remember Lord & Taylor?
Mm-hmm.
They all went under. Belk's department store, Lohman's, right?
Eckerd's used to be the pharmacy.
Well, Eckerd's was a purchase. Yeah,
oh, okay.
They were acquired by a big chain. Not Walgreens, I think it was the other one.
The competitor, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Steinmart is gone. Brooks Brothers is gone. Then you have other businesses like Chuck E. Cheese.
Uh-huh.
They're gone.
They're still there. Not as much.
They went bankrupt.
Really?
Yep. They're under. They got, you know, you're not going to find a Chuck E. Cheese anymore.
Oh, there's one in Hialeah for sure.
Mandel's, City Sports, you know, all the sporting goods companies have gone under.
Sports Authority's gone.
Right. Sports Authority. That's it. Well, they were acquired, but they were going under. Guts.
Yeah.
Also, another one went under.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of them that are mattress firms, you know. The mattress firm closed 200 stores.
Wow.
David's Bridal. Remember David's Bridal?
Mm-hmm.
They went under. Toys R Us. Gone.
Toys R Us.
I started to think of all of
that was an icon for me as a child. Used to go there all the time.
Payless Shoes. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Remember Barney's Clothes in New York? They went under.
What? Barney's went under?
Yeah. Pier 1 imports.
They're gone.
Gold's Gym. Gold's Gym. They used to be advertised. They were the head of the gym thing.
Yeah.
LA Fitness, I think, knocked them out of business. GNC Vitamins, gone. They just give you some of them, you know? Then I was thinking about all the automobiles. I didn't even talk about the automobile industry. I could name 20 automobiles. See if we can do it. That are out of business, you know, like Oldsmobile, okay,
yeah.
Pontiac, you know, maybe the Packard, right? DeSoto, LaSalle. There's a million of them. Did you ever know anything about the Duesenberg?
Nope.
Well, these were, you know, the original cars.
Yes.
There were a lot of them. And as the car industry developed, they got squeezed out by Ford, by the assembly line, the concept.
Right, the factory.
You're right.
Concept.
So you had, I don't know if you remember, the Hubmobile. That was a famous car. The Maxwell. Those were the real old ones. But recently you had the Tucker. Remember Tucker?
Mm-mm.
They came out with one light in the middle that turned when you turned the steering wheel. It was a wonderful car.
Interesting.
Saturn. Do you remember
Saturn? Saturn, I remember.
Saturn only went out in 2009, I think.
Yeah, recent.
They were acquired by GM. Saturn was, they would tell you when your car was being manufactured, they'd show you a picture of it coming up through the assembly line.
Oh, wow.
Studebaker. Remember Studebaker?
Not that one. No, I don't remember
that.
That
was another big car. They ran, and also they were competed in races, too. They were a racing car. The Stanley Steamer. I mean, going way back, Pierce Arrow. I started Hubmobile. I started to make lists. Nash. You remember Nash at all?
Mm-mm.
Well, when I was young, Nash came out with a car with a front seat converted into a bed.
Oh, boy.
And it was very popular with college students.
I bet.
Right. So those are some. There's the Hudson, the Kaiser Fraser. Hudson and Kaiser and Fraser were the first ones to incorporate the wheels into the body of the car as opposed to having fenders.
Oh.
So these were really, really super cars. Yellow cab is gone. There's a whole bunch of them. So it tells you about how fleeting business can be and how your life can go up and down, you know?
It sure can.
You learn about flamboyant people, too. The colonel was flamboyant, so he was dressed with the, and that's why everyone knows him.
Yeah,
he's the white
he stood
suit
out.
With the string tie, you know. If you look around, people are into costumes.
Huh.
And they're also into titles. So talk about the costumes first. You know, like Prince, and the Kardashians, and Jennifer Lopez, and Lady Gaga, that Beyonce, whatever. Buffalo Bill Cody, do you remember who he was?
Yeah.
He ran the Wild West shows. Well, he had the same like the Colonel with the string tie and the big hat, you know?
Yeah.
So that's part of the aura.
Yes.
That people use canes, you know, and things.
Uh-huh.
And I think the colonel used a cane also. Then titles. And I'll end with titles. We in this country are crazy about titles. We love titles. And we love to genuflect in front of other people. Oh, the queen, bow down and bend your knee. I'm not like that.
Me neither.
There are a lot of people that go for that stuff. So the colonel, the title of colonel. In the South, they are particularly enhanced, excited, by enchanted by titles. So you name your son Judge. There are a lot of kids named Judge.
Interesting.
A male name. Major. That's a, you could say this is Major Jones. And he's not a major. So sometimes captain. But they don't use colonel so much, but major.
That's hilarious.
And colonel,
never
and
noticed that.
Judge and mayor. So that's a very interesting phenomenon. We love them. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, in our lifetimes, we love to call people and politically, judge who this and commissioner that and secretary this and justice this and the honorable so-and-so. And of course, if you're in a profession, doctor, what makes an MD different from a PhD? Most PhDs do not call themselves doctors, although they're entitled to. The MDs are all called doctors, and it's a way that we defer to them. But they're nice. I mean, a dentist calls himself a doctor. Well, he fixes your teeth. Another guy fixes your car. You don't call him doctor.
But I have met people with a PhD that tell you, you have to call me Dr. So-and-so.
Yeah, well, they're insecure. I hope I'm not offending too many people. Then there's guys that are athletes. So they start to help kids learn a sport. So they call themselves coach.
Coach.
So they work at a high school in the gym department.
Without a team, there's no team, but they're coach.
There's a team, but they call them coach. So you're a high school coach. So all your life, coach this and coach that. And we love that kind of nonsense.
Yeah, there's life coaches too.
Right. And policemen. You have to call them officer.
Officer, yeah.
It's true. That's also bending your knee to authority, and I don't particularly dig it. I don't think it's great. I think people should be called by their first name if it's appropriate, or Mr. It's okay, or Mrs. But everybody should get a title.
Well, if their first name is Judge, you know.
That's right. Your first name is Judge.
What are you going to do?
You've got it made. So what is the conclusion?
Yeah, what's the conclusion?
The conclusion is life is uncertain, and you have health problems, you have accidents, you're walking along, and you're struck by lightning from out of the blue. Mm-hmm. I was on an airplane that was in clear skies and was struck by lightning, static electricity, and we were lucky we were able to land. It was a big streak up the tail of the plane.
How long ago did that happen?
Oh, a long time ago. Coming back from Europe on a 707, so it was a long time ago.
That must have been scary, yeah.
But those things happen. You drive your car, and you go through an intersection, and someone goes through the stop sign and smashes you and kills you. So we live a very – and we don't realize we're living on a bunch of floating areas on a molten lava sea.
Yes.
And we're living like islands.
And we're very fragile.
Every once in a while, through the cracks, the molten lava comes up.
Yeah.
We have, eruptions, volcanoes. But it's a very fragile life.
Yes. And we're pretty much a bag of flesh. I heard a friend say, we're a bag of flesh and we're very fragile. Anything can happen at any moment.
So the thing is to enjoy your life and to appreciate it and to realize that if you have – I like stability. I think Margaret had the best life of all.
Yeah, she really did.
So now we're doing Plutarch's Lives where you compare lives of people and you learn. And if you look at the three lives, Margaret and Harlan and the Colonel, I think Margaret was the wisest of them all.
Mm-hmm. Oh, she lived a balanced life.
She had stability. Yeah. And she had music and art and pleasure, and she was not materialistic.
Huh. That's wonderful. Thank you so much, Louis, for sharing this. Great story. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Don't forget to like our Facebook page, Miami Memoirs, and be sure to pick up a copy of Louis Rest's new book on Amazon.